Hello and welcome to the Going Courage podcast, where I talk to real people about real life, trying to gain some insights from their experiences building courage. Before we get started, I just want to encourage you to hit that subscribe button on YouTube. It really helps the channel grow and it helps me to bring more guests onto the podcast. You can also do the same on Apple Podcasts, Spotify and Amazon with a like and a follow. And if you're looking for links to social media channels, you can find them at www.goencourage.com. You can also grab a copy of the Courage Journal, which is a 31-day prompted journal designed to help you build courage in your life. All right, with all that said, let's bring on my next guest and let's see where the conversation goes. Hello, Courage Seekers. Today, I'm joined by Coach Tara, who's a men's coach and founder of Unblock Your BS. So really excited to have you in the studio today. How are you doing, Tara?
I'm doing wonderfully. So excited to be here.
Amazing. And you are joining us from a place across the pond, aren't you? Can you tell us where you are?
I live in Nashville, Tennessee, country music capital of the world.
Nashville, Tennessee.
Very cold
today. Oh, what's the temperature like?
It's 32 Fahrenheit, so freezing. Zero Celsius, yeah.
Is that zero Celsius? Is it actually?
I think so. Yeah.
I never think of Nashville as being ever cold, you know, in my head.
Yeah, we've got an Arctic blast coming towards us. So apparently the North Pole is getting a little cranky as Santa's gearing up.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. Actually, I don't know what's the temperature here. Oh, I can only tell you the temperature in this room, which is a nice toasty nice. 18 yeah, degrees, nice. Which is great. So there you go. So it's a bit of a tradition on this podcast to ask people if they know what their name means. So Tara, do you know what your name means?
I've looked it up in Gaelic as tall tower or rocky crag back when my mom used to have it posted. I'm 5'11", which I don't know what that translates to in centimeters, but I'm tall. So that always made sense. But no, I don't know in any other language what it means.
Okay. 5'11". We use 5'11" here as well. We don't use centimeters. So you're right. You're good. Translates well.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I had a little look up as well, what your name might mean. And in Hinduism, it means star. And also savior, which is really interesting.
I mean, I'll take it. I'm certainly not going to complain about that. Saving men, one man at a time, you know?
I was going to say, it kind of links to what you're doing. And then in Buddhism, or at least Buddhist influence, it means elevated or noble, which is quite interesting.
Interesting.
As well. Yeah.
I mean, I think I represent all of those. Thanks, Mom and Dad. That was a wise name choice. I was actually named after a movie, Gone with the Wind, or a book, I guess. So it was a big plantation in the book.
Okay. Yeah. There you go. Well, I mean, it's a powerful name, right? So I love that you're embracing it, and high five to Mom and Dad. So
I'll let them know. I'll send them regards.
All right. So I thought we could start with some icebreaker questions. But before I do, can you quickly tell, if you had to sum up what you do, tell the Going Courage audience, what would it be? How would you
I help men struggling in relationships and marriages, going through divorce or on the other side of divorce, with nervous system regulation so they can be emotionally safe partners and emotionally safe within themselves as well.
Love that. So good. All right. Yeah. We're gonna totally unpack that. So
yes,
let's get going. And if you have tuned into the beginning, stay till the end and find out all of the links where you can connect with Tara directly as well. All right. Icebreaker questions. You ready?
Let's go. Let's do it.
Favorite food, Tara?
Sushi.
Interesting. Yeah. All right. Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Do you have a dog?
I do. He might come sit back here. He matches the couch. His name is Scotch. He's a labradoodle.
Oh, amazing. So he's going to blend right in. Okay, brilliant.
He does. Left
or right?
Straight down the middle.
Okay. First person who said
direct.
That. Brilliant. Like it. Some would say no BS, right?
Right.
Favorite season?
Fall.
Nice. Autumn. Yeah. Like it. Yep. Favorite sport, if you have one?
American football.
Do you have a team?
Probably the Kansas City Chiefs if I had to go one path. Yeah.
Okay. All right. But it sounds like you're embracing more than one, which is...
My son has recently really gotten into football. So we're doing fantasy football as a family. And that's been a lot of fun. And so I'm learning more about other teams and players. So I might switch next year. But I do like the Chiefs.
Okay. Yeah. You've got to support your children, right? It's important. Yeah. all right, star sign?
Aquarius.
Is that like January? Am I wrong?
February 10th is my birthday.
February, yeah. Okay.
Water sign. Nice. Or air sign? Water sign. Air sign? I try to pay attention to that stuff, but there's so much information I lose track of it.
Yeah, and then you're always like, how much should I pay attention to this stuff?
Apparently, I hold grudges according to being an Aquarius. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'll try and offend you. Let's see how we get on.
Good luck.
Okay. Are you a dress up or a dress down sort of person?
Dress down.
dressed down, comfortable.
Yeah. Comfy. Yoga clothes most of the time, or workout clothes most of the time.
Nice. Are you known for being early, on time, late?
I like to think I'm on time, but I'm probably known for being a little late.
A little bit. Okay, fair play. I know you had back-to-back podcasts today as well, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. I did. And I was late, so yep. Mm-hmm. Late
I'm
it
just,
is.
I'm just trying to offend you.
I own it. I accept it. I apologize for it.
Oh, you're going to be too hard to offend. Okay, all right. what's a special location for you?
Probably Bend, Oregon. It's a small little ski town that I like to go because as a single woman, I'm not letting being single stop me, and I love to go skiing there, and it's a safe place for me to feel comfortable being alone on a mountain skiing.
Wow.
It's beautiful. Sounds incredible.
Yeah. Would you recommend skiing? I've never done it.
I would. My daughter wouldn't. She broke her leg the first time she tried it. So, but I grew up skiing, so it's always fun for me. It's very peaceful.
Nice. Yeah. Just you in the slopes, right?
Yep. Just me in the snow and the trees.
Amazing. Okay. A book or a movie or a TV show, something that you'd recommend?
I love The Alchemist, and The Four Agreements have been ones that I've really leaned into the past probably 2 or 3 years.
That's amazing. What's the second one, sorry?
The Four Agreements.
The Four Agreements.
Miguel Ruiz. Ah, yeah.
I'm going to write this down. Okay. I'll check that out. I'm a bit of a, you know, I have amazing guests on the podcast and they sort of recommend books, and so I just look into them. And The Alchemist has been recommended a number of times, and I'm reading it at the moment. So good. So good.
Yeah. Right? It takes all sorts of twists and turns, and then I've read it a couple times, and every time it's something new and you get new information and new ideas and new insights. So yeah.
Phenomenal. Yeah. And it's been around what, 20 years, 30 years, 40
years? A long time.
Long, long time.
Yeah.
All right. And then what made you decide to come on the podcast today?
You asked.
Straight down
and I
the
thought,
middle.
Why not? Let's have a conversation. You seem to be aligned with kind of the messaging and the audience that I want to connect with.
Yeah, and I think you put out a reel, and it just really like made so much sense to me.
Did it really?
It really did. The dad jokes are in. but it made so much sense, and I was like, oh my gosh, this would be so cool to kind of connect with you and see if you'd be up for talking about it. So yeah, we'll get into that. And then a cheeky one, you ready? Have you subscribed to the Going Courage podcast?
I did right before I logged in because I didn't know it was on YouTube. So now I am a subscriber.
Yeah, welcome aboard. All right. So thank you. You have completed the icebreaker questions. I hope people who are listening.
Okay, I survived. Okay, good.
You got A star. It's all good. All right. So I thought we could talk a little bit about your origins, your journey to where you are now. So can you share a little bit about your upbringing, where you grew up, what might have had an influence on your life?
Yeah, I had a great childhood. Parents are still married. They're going to celebrate 50 years this next year. Mm-hmm. And felt like I was shy. I felt I was more emotional than everybody else in my family because they weren't super emotional. And it wasn't really until I got into starting to like date in my late teen years, looking back now, that how much attention and validation I needed outside of me, that I probably didn't have a whole lot of self-worth. Even though I was very successful in sports and there was a lot of achievement and a lot of external validation I got through sports, I really craved it from boys, right? And ultimately probably from my dad, which I didn't really kind of understand about myself until my 30s. But yeah, it was no major trauma. I always talk about the difference between big T trauma and little T trauma. I probably had little T traumas and no real big T traumas. Parents are still together. I have an older brother who we didn't get along when we were kids, but now we get along. So nothing that would indicate that I have all of this trauma to then go heal it in my adult life and then help others with it. So it is kind of an interesting journey that now in my world, I'm very well versed in trauma healing and understanding people in their childhood and how it affects adult relationships. It is interesting because I find a lot of people who get into this kind of work had really jacked up childhoods that they had to navigate through and find all these skills and tools. And for me, that didn't come until I got married and in my marriage and how that became destructive.
Wow. And so you and your brother there, did you say?
Yep.
And is he a coach?
No, he is a stay-at-home dad. He married a very successful surgeon.
Amazing.
He is not on social media at all, like has no idea what I do. As far as he knows, I'm still a coach for salon and spa owners, which was my previous business before jumping into this world. So yeah, he's I wouldn't say he's self-aware at all, even. We're a little bit polar opposites, you know?
Okay, same
parents, same upbringing, but very different paths.
Yeah, I was just seeing if there's a connection there in terms of, yeah, where you've ended up. But it sounds like, from what you're saying there wasn't like a massive T moment for you that made you go in this direction. Because you're right, a lot of people have something that has happened that then they go on a healing journey and quite often the response is, I want to help other people through this.
Yeah, for sure happened way later in my life.
Okay. And just while we're on the subject of origin, like when you think of yourself as a young girl, did you have an ambition? Did you say, oh, when I grow up, I want to be a...
What did I want to be? I wanted to be in the WNBA. So that's the Women's National Basketball Association, because I was into basketball. And then I wanted to be, an athletic trainer. So that's kind of like they tape all the athletes' ankles and basically glorified water boys or water girls. That was like the main thing in childhood that I thought would be really cool to do. Turns out I don't like science and I didn't want to do anything in the medical health field. And then I stopped playing basketball my senior year in high school. So those career prospects went out the window.
Okay. All right. Yeah. You threw them out the window like a basketball.
I just dunked them. Just dunked them.
And always been tall because you're 5'11", right? So that would have helped with basketball,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. That was a very great sport for us tall girls.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Yeah. All right. And then in present day, what does family or community life look like now?
Yeah. So I'm a mom to two young kids. I have an 8-year-old and an 11-year-old. So we're still in elementary, what we call elementary.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long distance relationship, becoming a first step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Elementary age, and they are very busy in sports and activities, so a lot of my world revolves around them. Along with, I'm also a business coach for online entrepreneurs as like a side hustle thing that I just love to do for pure passion. And I'm very involved in CrossFit. Despite what my body ability is, I'm scale for life, but I love competing in it. I love the community that CrossFit offers. So that's kind of where I spend a lot of my time is online coaching, community, kids. Mm. Yeah.
Okay. If I can ask, I'll be very cheeky here and ask you this question. It's got nothing to do with what we're talking about, but CrossFit. So is that the idea that you come into a community space and you're trying, like, correct me if I'm wrong, and you have your own personal bests that you're trying to
get so better at? It's a combination of a lot of different functional movements, but there's barbell work and there's gymnastics work. Now, being as tall as I am, gymnastic skills, not my greatest quality. Plus, I don't feel like I'm meant to be upside down. So any sort of upside down work, whether it's handstand pushups or walks, just not my skill set. But I started this 2.5 years ago. I was introduced to it by a friend, and I'd never picked up a barbell in my life. And I love Olympic lifting and barbell lifts. So that's been really fun. But the primary reason why I got into CrossFit is because I felt very lonely and isolated I've been living in Nashville for 5 years, but hadn't really built a community. And CrossFit has community built into it. There's a lot of events my gym does, a lot of things that you do outside of the class with the community. So that felt like I was just being plugged into something that already existed rather than having to go out and make friends as an adult, which is always fun and challenging.
Yeah, always. Yeah, especially if you've, I think you touched on it before, like you've come out of maybe a relationship where there was lots of connections with lots of different people and you've taken a different direction. Some of those relationships start to die down for multiple reasons. You're trying to find your...
We had moved across country during the pandemic, so there was no community here when we got here. And then we divorced shortly thereafter. So yeah, it was a whole rebuilding in a new part of the world.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Which then I can really see the appeal for CrossFit community there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And if you're working out, the endorphins yeah. are happening.
Hear my
and
safe
you're connecting.
Space.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Brilliant. All right. Routines, mindset practices, rituals. Are there things that you use to help you stay grounded?
Sleep. That's a big one. I work with a shaman, so that's some people get a little weird about that, but to me it is a lot of just intentionality in practices like meditation. Mm-hmm. So a part of that is breath work is a massive component for me to regulate myself, whether I'm doing just a 5-minute quick little thing or do an entire hour long session, whether I'm doing it with a coach or whether I'm doing it with even just YouTube videos. Mm-hmm. But that's probably the biggest piece for me to connect back with myself. A little bit of journaling in there when I have the patience to do it, because that helps me process out all of the overthinking and get it onto paper as a problem to solve for. Mm-hmm. And then, if I can get to do yoga, that's probably where I feel most connected with myself, because I'm in my body and not in my head.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah. Makes sense. And you're fully present in those moments as well, aren't you?
Yeah. You're suffering right in that moment right there.
And in terms of, do you have like a set time of day you do that? Do you squeeze it in when you can? Yeah. Or are you quite, strict about, okay, before I start?
No,
my day?
I'm not super strict with it. I could probably be more consistent with it, but because of the schedule I have my kids, it's like go, go, go when they're here. And then when they're at their dad's, that's when I'm like rest and recharge. So that's usually when I have more time to do those things. Because I try to be very present when my kids are home.
Yeah. I got that. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I can relate to that as well. So when my 50-50 setup as well, when mine's up with me, I like to be fully present, be there. But fully present usually means running around, right? Yeah. Getting all the stuff done.
Like I'm watching you play sports, but I'm not with you. Yeah.
I'm with you. Okay. All right. And then have you ever done like personality tests, like the love languages test, things like that? Do you find them helpful?
Have you done all of them? Personality test. I don't remember what my personality test was, because I actually think that they're very self-assessed as opposed to like really true about you. So I think I was an INFJ back when I took it, but I actually don't think I'm an introvert. I think I relax by myself more so, but I love being around people. But my love languages are words of affirmation and physical touch are the primary ones. So I love to hear the validation and the compliments and all that kind of stuff. But what I've also learned about myself is that I have to value integrity as my top core value, because I've learned that I will just go wherever the words are nice, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that's a healthy or safe space for me to be in.
That's really good.
People can say what they want to say and have it not mean shit.
Yeah. And you know what? And then I'm sure we'll get onto this a little bit later on, but it's that external validation that we start to chase. Because if that's our love language, then, that's what gives us that hit, doesn't it? Influx 100%. Of love, absolutely.
Worth and validation and love.
Are you spiritual? Do you believe in God or a higher power?
Yes, I believe in God. I'm not aligned with any religion. Working with a shaman, most religions are going to be like, eh. I would say definitely spiritual. Believe that there's a purpose and a reason we're here. Mm-hmm. Believe in energy and vibrational and manifestation.
And does that help you stay sort of directed and grounded? Maybe not even grounded, but just give you a vision for what you're doing moving forward and an alignment.
Yeah, I had to deconstruct my faith a lot. I wasn't raised in any sort of religion, became Christian in my 20s. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I had a miscarriage in 2012, very early on in my marriage, that really had me like questioning religion and God and all of this. And so it was a whole big process of me kind of pushing God away and religion away. I'd been hurt by a lot of people in the church and a lot of hypocrisy I experienced in the church. And so when I started kind of bringing faith back into my life and trying to understand what that looked like, in a lot of ways, my self-awareness journey has been like everything is made up. Every thought you think was either it's a response to something else, or it's a thought you've thought before, or something somebody else told you, and we just believe it as facts, whether it's the Bible, whether it's a teacher, whether it's a parent, whether it's the government, whatever. To me, I kind of look at it as everybody's making everything up to the best of their ability and the knowledge that they've been given. So when I started kind of becoming more self-aware and challenging my own thoughts about myself, I started challenging my thoughts and beliefs about everything else. So I would say my spirituality is just an amalgamation of everything that I choose to believe, not because somebody told me to believe it, But when my spiritual practices make sense to me and they help me feel connected with a greater purpose and humanity. And I don't know that I necessarily need to be told what's right and wrong, good or bad. I kind of have come up with my own belief systems on that, and somebody else can believe they're right, wrong, good or bad. But that's, again, I think that's what's beautiful about self-awareness is when you're rooted in yourself, you're not, it doesn't matter what other people think about you. That's their beliefs, their thoughts, their patterns.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I think when all, at the end of the day, your beliefs matter based on your, I don't know what you want to call it, research, your evidence, whatever that looks like, whether that's being a scholar, whether that's, you know, responding to what life throws at you, whether that's being around certain people from different groups that kind of behave in a particular way and that turns you on or turns you off, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And I think it's, it's a bit of I don't know how to put it. Like, it's almost like there are, you know, society feeds you this stuff based on little to no evidence. And it's a projection of someone else's fears because they don't quite understand the scripture or the principle or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah, that's what I wrestled with, was how can one religion be the only way, the right way, the truth, the light, whatever, but other religions, where if you were raised in that religion, you believe that's right, the truth, whatever. So how can they both be right if their way is the only way? And so it never made sense to me of, like, depending on where you grew up or what was practiced in your house, that that's the only way, but other people feel just as strongly about their way. And so to me, it was like, how do you choose just based on your environment or what you were brought up in? And so even just that, poking that hole or asking that question in a belief system or a religion now kind of opens up the can of worms of, like, well, not everybody can be right, right? Or if there's only one way, but there's other ways out there, who's to say who's the one way or versus not? So that, you know, and everybody, every religion has their explanation for that. But again, every religion has their explanation for that. So that's where organized religion and structured religion just never made sense to me as far as something to, I don't want to say buy into, because I think religions are choices for the most part, but like choose to continue to practice that when it is so exclusive or exclusionary to other ways of thinking or being.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from. I think community is a big thing.
I agree.
I think, you know, if you have a community that's based around a common value, and I think, you know, if we surveyed everyone in the world, I think most people, this is my guesstimate anyway, is that most people would say love is the thing that kind of connects us all together, whatever that looks like, that expression. And I think if there is a creator, if there is God, I think, you know, there's love at the heart of that. And that's very difficult to factualize and then say that this part's right, this part's wrong, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And if we are, I come from a Christian background, and if we are, you know, believers that there is some form of whatever you want to call it, judgment or balance or whatever, then you have to own your stuff and be prepared to, you know, to stand on that. And I think you can't do that on someone else's belief or someone else's faith or someone else's, you know, doctrination. You have to find that journey for yourself and go straight through the middle. You know, we were talking about left or right earlier on, but like, just go straight to the middle and go, I might be wrong, but this is where I've landed. And I think that's
right, an
authentic place to be. Yeah, exactly that. And I think when you live in that authenticity, right and wrong starts to fade away, and it starts to be like, okay, this was my experience, this is what I think, and this is the outcome of my beliefs. Let's have a look at that, you know.
Yeah. And not trying to convince anybody else that they're right, wrong, good or bad. It's like, who gets to define right, wrong, good or bad?
Yeah, I love that, because I think if you can convince someone into something, you can equally convince them out of it, right?
Yeah.
So you're better off like being the author of your life, like live with intention and try and work it out and be prepared to be wrong or right or whatever in between as well.
Yeah. Radical accountability, radical responsibility, which I believe is part of the four agreements, making this a full circle moment. So
there you go. All right. So on the subject of courage, what does courage mean to Tara? What does that word mean to you?
Whew, that's a good one. I think courage precedes confidence and action. It's being bold to take a risk and to take a step towards something that you want, regardless of how it's going to turn out.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's almost like being detached from any sort of specific outcome, but having, I guess, enough self-belief that you'll figure it out along the way.
Yeah, that's good.
Or is it bad? Or is it right? Or is it wrong?
It's a good perspective is what I meant to say.
Yeah.
And I think when you're in the moment, when fear comes to your door, knocking on your door, what kind of things come to mind for you when you're in those positions? Like, okay, I'm scared right now. I can sense that I'm scared, or maybe logically I can see that I'm scared. How shall I face this?
Yeah, so whenever a fear comes up, I look at what is it trying to protect me from, and is that something I need to be protected from? So I really psychoanalyze the fear. If we're speaking specifically towards, let's just say, relationships, like if I am afraid I'm going to be abandoned, or I'm afraid like, oh, they haven't texted me in a while, like what does it mean? Or what are they doing? Why are they not responding? And trying to analyze what's happening with them, I go, no, what's the fear in me that has me trying to control an outcome or an experience? And part of that fear is trying to protect you. Like we really broke down what fear is. It's trying to protect you from hurt, pain, an undesirable outcome. And that's where I start to challenge it. Is that in the realm of possibility, or is this just stories that my head are trying to feed me to keep me safe and keep me the same? Because your brain is designed to keep you surviving. It's not meant to keep you thriving. And so if I don't challenge those thoughts and those patterns in my nervous system of, oh, this happened, so we use fear, this happens, we use anger, then I may not get to what I actually want to experience, which would be something of thriving in life, whether that's a happy, healthy relationship, or to feel loved. If I keep fear at the main, like in the forefront, and I let that cause me to make behaviors and decisions based on fear, I'm probably going to have more fear. And then I'm going to validate the fear and go, there's more things to be afraid of. And so it keeps you in that spiral and keeps you in the same box of not so fun fear. Did that answer your question? I went on a total tangent.
No, yeah, I love it. Absolutely love it. And I think, well, actually, if we be specific to the way that you handle fear, is that from years of flexing that muscle? Is that because you've done a lot of work in terms of coaching and things like that? Or do you think you've naturally sort of always had that approach to being
in fearful situation? No, that's been a skill to develop over time. So it's either looking at whether it's my fear in my body that I need to address, or fear in the mind. Mm-hmm. So being able to coach myself through kind of the process I just worked you through, if I'm still feeling afraid, even though I can logically understand why I shouldn't be, but I still feel it, that's when I'll deploy a different tool like breath work to let my body process out the fear and let it feel it rather than avoid it, so that it stops again feeding the thoughts that keep the fear going.
I'm mindful of an audience member, someone who's listening, thinking about breath work in that situation. Could you give us a little example of how that would be beneficial in the moment?
Yeah. So breath work, there's a variety of different ways that breath work can be done. The primary practice that I use is called somatic breath work, and it's an hour long to 75 minute session of specific breathing patterns. Now, you could do specific intentional breath work in 5 minutes. So anytime that we breathe through the nose, that's informing our nervous system we're safe. If you think about it, when you sleep, you're supposed to be breathing through your nose. Not all of us do, but that's informing to the body, we don't have anything to worry about here. We're safe. We're safe. So you can do 5 intentional breaths through your nose, a big sigh out through the mouth. And you'll start to notice just even in that intention, your body calms a little bit. Maybe you need 10 breaths depending on how severe your anxiety is. If you're breathing through the mouth, and like we're doing a lot of talking, so where our breaths are very shallow, but if you're going, that's going to trigger essentially what is going to feel like a panic attack, but it's getting to bring up the emotion. It is turning up the heat on your emotion. And so what breath work does is we create this intentional space during that hour of being intentional about bringing up the breath, the emotions that's been repressed, that's locked in the nervous system, so that they can be expressed. So you can actually feel your feelings. That's what they're meant to do in a safe container. And then on the second half, we use nasal breathing in order to bring everything down and calm down. But in the process of that, and over an hour period of time, we're actually shifting the CO2 and O2 levels in your body. And it starts to release a chemical called DMT, which is the same synthetic chemical or natural chemical that's released during psychedelics, where you have visions and all that kind of stuff. But this is already natural in your body. It's part of your sleep cycle. So we are actually doing that within the breath work to get a little bit of that released. So you actually can feel very high, or have an out-of-body experience, or have an overwhelming amount of peace in that experience. And so you can get a lot of clarity and a lot of visions about yourself or the future that's very cathartic after you've released and let your nervous system clear in the first half. So an hour-long session can be like 10 years of therapy. It's what's addressing what's in the body, which is where we experience and feel life. We don't experience life through the head. The thoughts feed the hormones that go into the body that we have as a feeling. And so that's how you can actually start to feel how you want to feel without anything outside of you changing. I can put anybody into a hypnotic or meditative state and not change a single thing outside of them just by way of breath work.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I have to ask, if someone was listening to that and wanted to reach out to you and sort of sign up for a session like that, what would be the best way for them to do that?
You can DM me. You can also go to my website. We have links there. I do one-on-one sessions, or we have a community that's much more affordable where we do breathwork sessions live as a community. And then there's replays all the time because I get it. Sometimes you need a breathwork session, but not at the scheduled time that we have the lives. So we do make it available. So we call it an on-demand library of breathwork that's available 24/7.
Amazing.
It's been a wildly impactful tool. It's been life-changing for me. That's why I became a practitioner in it. Yeah.
Fantastic. Oh, I'll put a link in the description below if you're watching on YouTube. Something should come up on the screen in a second as well. So yeah, definitely reach out to Tara for that. That's powerful. I mean, I know you're just giving me an overview and sort of touching on the subject there. Let's say someone did that for a while and then found themselves facing a lion, like metaphorically speaking, and needed to calm themselves down. Do you think that skill is something that can be developed and then within a few moments they're able to just incorporate that into day-to-day?
When you say they're facing a lion, I immediately go, we don't want to actually numb out the survival responses that keep us safe. We want to understand them. So if you're facing a lion, I wouldn't change your nervous system state in that moment because your body is correct in perceiving the threat, that there is a threat in front of you. Now, I know we're talking about metaphorical lion. If we look at the nervous system responses as your body is working exactly how it should, it just may be tuned to the wrong thing based on... So our brain and our body can't really tell the difference between what's happening outside of us and a thought that we think. So if we think a man not texting me back that I've just started talking to is a lion, my thoughts are not accurate, right? Because that's going to feed that, oh, I'm in danger, I'm going to get rejected, or I'm not good enough, or whatever. So it's part of understanding, is my body appropriately responding to a threat that we don't want to change? Because we don't want it just to be that you never have an emotion. We want to understand what the emotions or the body is communicating to you. So to me, the way that I approach it is that your emotions are like a language you just haven't learned. So think of self-awareness practices and something like breath work as like the Duolingo for understanding your body and how it communicates to you. Most people, because they're not given the skills and tools to be able to navigate and understand their emotions, just learn to numb, distract, or repress their emotions. That's what's societally acceptable. But that means that you have to numb out and repress parts of you. And so the metaphor that I often use, especially because I work a lot with men, and I have to make this very logical, is that most people, we'll just say most men, are walking around as boiling pots of water with the lid on it. So everything is just, right? And one little trigger or one little pop of the lid, we're afraid to go into that because either we've popped the lid before and it created a lot of destruction and chaos, so we don't want to do that again. Or we're afraid that if we lift the lid, we'll never be able to get it back on again, and we don't know what to do when we get in those deep, dark holes of emotion. We think we'll never get out of it. So when we have something like breathwork as an example, and that's not the only somatic experience you can have, but we are creating a safe space for you to intentionally lift the lid with your breath and let out whatever you're going to let out. Why people don't usually know how to process their emotions is that they learned very early on in their childhood that my emotions are not safe. They either have a negative impact on somebody else, or they're not met, and so I don't know how to experience that kind of rejection of my emotions or myself, so I'll just play small. We have four default survival responses that we learn in childhood: fight, flight, fawn, or freeze, right? And it's usually based on when we have an emotional need, how somebody reacted to our emotional need develops our survival response in those moments. We're not present to it. It is just how we learn to survive in our childhood, whether, again, good childhood or bad childhood. And that's what we carry into adult relationships that then get triggered. Because when we go into adult relationships, we go towards what's familiar, not what's safe. So all that to say, where were we starting with that? The lion. So in those moments, yes, you can have tools to develop to be able to get you out of a emotional response into a logical response if it's needed. So if your partner is giving you feedback or criticism and you perceive that as a lion attacking you, you're probably going to get defensive. But yes, we can have practices in those moments. And that's a lot of what I teach in my men's program. It's called The Power of the Pause. If you pause just for a couple seconds to really go, what is it I'm thinking in this moment? They think I'm not good enough. They're asking of me something that I can't do, or, you know, all of those internal beliefs. When we get present to those thoughts, we can start to go, is that true? And if you can't emotionally get a hold of yourself in that moment to be able to ask what's really at play here or have good communication, that's when you can deploy a tool like, I need to go for a walk. I need to get something to eat. Can we come back to this tomorrow? I need to process it out. Mm. But instead, we call it anxious attachment, avoidant attachment, and just default to they're an avoidant, they're anxious. Mm-hmm. And we don't actually resolve problems when we just throw a label on it.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah. Really, really, really good in terms of, yeah, trying to understand that in the moment and avoid the label, even though it might help if it's like a pattern of behavior and it's a way to, you know, understand yourself.
It helps us classify a series of behaviors for sure. But what do we do with that label is always the next question I ask. Yeah.
No, exactly right. Exactly right. And I think, you know, if you're in the moment and you're able to have that layer where you say, okay, how am I responding to what's going on in front of me? Yeah. And then I liked what you said earlier on as well. Is it an appropriate feeling or thought to have based on the situation in front? Because it's not like a, you know, one rule for everything, right? So what's going on in front of me? Are we about to approach a difficult, we're talking about relationship, are we about to approach a really difficult conversation that we've tried to have a few times that hasn't gone the right way? Am I now carrying that same response from last time or resentment? Or actually, is what she's saying to me right now quite fair? Maybe that is a very fair point.
And it hurts to accept that about myself or that I've caused harm. My question is always, why are we perceiving our partner as the lion, right? Because either they are a lion, they are truly a hurtful, destructive, I mean, assuming the lion's attacking, right? Then we have to look at, why am I choosing to expose myself to a lion consistently? Right? People want to say like, oh, a narcissist. Well, you're choosing to be with a narcissist. So again, personal responsibility, radical responsibility. Why am I choosing to continue to expose myself to this? Or my partner's not a lion. I've just been attacked by a lion before and I learned how to protect myself from a lion, which keeps everybody else out. But this is actually somebody that is that I love, that I know loves me. And we're trying to have a hard conversation, but I can't interpret it in any other way than a lion attacking me. That's my work to do. And sure, maybe they need to work on themselves as well to not, you know, act as a lion and put on the lion costume. But yeah, it's really looking at what can I do in these moments rather than so many people want their partner to change and try to manipulate, even in unintentional ways, their partner to stop the perceived attack, even though you're the one that is feeling attacked.
Yeah, for sure. And then again, it's out of your control, right? The other person, how they choose to respond or react, you can't really change that. You might think you can
influence it, but you cannot control it.
You cannot control it, absolutely. So you might say, oh, I might do this, I might do that. But actually, it's almost like a distraction, a deflection or a distraction from what's going on in front of you anyway, because you're not taking onus for your response to it or your reaction.
Yeah. Yeah, it's oftentimes people get caught in these cycles and these loops of symptoms of issues, not actual root problem. So a lot of what I get from men is like, oh, we have a roommate marriage. She hasn't touched me in over a year. We never have sex. And I'm like, that is the symptom to a much deeper problem, because they always want to know. Inevitably, it'd go viral when I'm like, oh, how to get, you know, more physical intimacy in your relationship, A, because I'm good at marketing and I know how to create a hook, because the men are like, oh, yeah, what can I do to get her to be more intimate with me? Because men feel much more connected during physical intimacy, whereas women feel much more connected during emotional intimacy. But it's really about the man of how he's creating emotional safety for her to feel safe to go into those realms. And when we want to look at, we can get into polarity, but like traditional masculine, feminine polarity, the man is supposed to be the leader, or could be, and has the opportunity to be the leader. So yes, it is him creating the emotionally safe space, because when you create an emotionally safe space for a woman, I promise you, you will have zero issues of her initiating and wanting intimacy in the bedroom, hormones aside, but yeah.
Yeah. And if you go through all of those, let's say, I'm speaking man talk here, if you've jumped through all of those hoops and that's still not getting you to the places that you know that you're trying to get to, maybe there's something else at play. Maybe there's a deeper rooted issue.
Always something else. Yeah. The physical intimacy is the side effect.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. And it is the number one thing. I do a lot of work with men in sort of men's groups. And when it comes to relationships, there is that you know, that sexual desire that's quite prominent, quite strong. Yeah. But actually, even that, you know, we could judgment, oh, you only want one thing, whatever. But actually, if you strip the layer back from that as well, there is a sense of when we were young boys, our mother used to, used to cuddle us and pat us, and so there's that
physical touch. It's intimacy that they crave.
It's the intimacy that they crave.
Right, and when you struggle with emotional intimacy because you never understood it, you were never taught it, or you were taught that emotions are bad or wrong, the default then for men becomes physical intimacy because it's something I can do.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of women don't, they want you to be with them. And that's where there's a big disconnect, especially in modern day relationships, of doing versus being. Mm. Right. And when men don't feel emotionally comfortable with their own emotions, how they treat their partner's emotions is often how they treat theirs. I just want to fix it. I just want it to go away because I'm uncomfortable with sitting with it and I don't know what to do with it. Then she's going to shut down her emotions. And when her emotion shuts down, so does her libido.
Mm.
Yeah. So it's where we have this disconnect, and men, yes, have hormones that also drive testosterone and sexual desire and all of that. But really, it's mainly they're using sex for intimacy, which is absolutely what it should be and could be and probably was at the beginning. But if she's not feeling emotionally safe or she's feeling emotionally distant, then she's not going to enjoy it. And that doesn't get you the intimacy anyways, because it's just the action and the act, not the connection piece. So both parties are looking for connection, but they just have different means of trying to get that.
Yeah, I agree. And I love the point that you make. I was going to make it too, is just if we are looking at the traditional setup of a man being a leader, we can often see that in terms of leading in the home or leading in business or leading in work and finance, all the rest of it. But actually, you know, in this cycle, in this dance that we're talking about, someone has to lead, right? And so leading that emotionally safe space falls on him. Yeah.
Yes, because if she starts leading, she goes into mommy mode, and no mother wants to have intimacy with their child in that way, right? Yeah.
And on the flip side of things, the man goes into boy mode because now he feels like he's being mothered. Oh, why are you nagging me all the time? Why are you saying? Yep. And then the same thing happens.
Or that you have to please her and get the gold star of approval, and you did it. You're a good boy. Like it gets the polarity off.
When
polarity's off, there's no sexual attraction.
So common as well, right?
Yeah. Just a touch, just a skosh.
I think we should maybe take one of the curriculum in school, one of the subjects out, and maybe start teaching this to youngsters, from
stuff. I don't use calculus or physics ever, right? And I never even learned business or finances or emotional intelligence. I mean, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, I'm being conservative, right? I'm saying let's take one thing out, but yeah, there's a whole bunch of stuff. But yeah, I would say I know this is slightly off topic, but how to manage your finances and how to manage relationships would be two very important life skills that we could learn at school.
Right, but then nobody would have debt and everybody would have happy relationships, and then they wouldn't rely on all these external things that make money off of us. So, I mean,
absolutely. And, you know, we touched on that before. You talked about, you know, you've got an issue with your partner, let's say, staying on the theme of relationships. You feel oh, she doesn't want me, even though I've jumped through all the hoops and done all the stuff, and she doesn't want me. I've gone into boy mode, she's gone into mum mode, etc. But instead of having the adult mature conversation, I'm going to go and watch a game, or I'm going to go for a drink, or I'm going to scroll on TikTok, or do whatever. And then you just get caught up in the cycle. And you go in there with the intention of distracting and numbing the pain, the rejection or whatever that feels like, but you don't realize that the stuff that you're consuming is creating fear within you as well. Fear of not being the man, or not being as pretty as the other woman, if you're a woman, or whatever it is. All the stuff, there's so much, right? There's like an encyclopedia of all sorts of, there's a menu of all sorts of stuff that we can compare ourselves to. Yeah. And then we further just think worse and worse. If only I could be like this person, then the relationship that I have will be better, you know, and it's all that external validation again, just grasping out there. And like you said, you know, the system is designed to run like that, so that we are paying for the whatever you want to call it.
Massive chemical addictions, whether it's, you know, dopamine or alcohol or drugs or sex addictions, all of that is just essentially an unregulated nervous system. But those vices are very effective at solving for whatever the internal issue is. They're just not healthy, right? Or they're destructive to the connection that you ultimately want. And part of that, when we talk about that external validation, is rooted in low self-worth. If you have an identity that you're bad, wrong, or broken, and that is creating chaos in your relationship because you've used her or him to give you that validation, but they're human, they're going to have moments of good, bad, up, down, being upset with you, being happy with you. If your self-worth is dependent on somebody else, we call that codependency, then yeah, you're going to be on a roller coaster of emotions, not feeling very good about yourself. Whereas when you have a strong self-worth, self-love, self-respect, somebody else's emotional state and opinion of you is far less effective on you feeling any different about yourself. So that's a lot of what I work on with men is like, yeah, let's talk about the relationships, but that's just a mirror for how you feel about yourself. Because when you are grounded, what I call it, grounded in yourself, like you have unshakable confidence that you understand I'm not perfect, I'm going to mess up, but I also have a lot of grace and empathy for myself. And I also think that like I'm showing up in a way that I respect. Then we can look at what your partner's experiencing from a level of curiosity, not of an attack on you or validation and evidence of your own internal beliefs, which is that you're bad, wrong, or broken. So it really starts to repair basically the little boy or the inner child that believes something's wrong with them, that the outside world, you're finding evidence to match that. Because your brain wants to be right, right? It wants you to survive, and it wants you to survive in the known. And so it will go out into your outside world and find evidence to match your internal beliefs. So if you believe that you're wrong, bad, or broken, it's going to go find all of the evidence to go, yep, see, she's upset with you. Yep, see, you left your socks on the floor. Yep, see, you work too much. Yep, see, she doesn't feel emotionally safe with you. You're the problem. Whereas if you have a belief of like, I'm a man who's committed to growth and learning, and I love to provide, and I love to protect, and I love to be emotionally safe for her, then your brain will also go try to find evidence to match that. And any evidence that comes in that challenges that, you either don't feed into it. Like she can say, you're such an asshole. And you know, you're not an asshole and you don't believe you're an asshole. You go, she's having a moment. I'm not going to internalize that as something's wrong with me. Whereas if you don't have that, you hear asshole, then you either get defensive or you shut down or those survival responses. So it really kind of ties back down to your own sense of self and what you believe about yourself. And a belief is just a series of thoughts that you stopped questioning.
That you stopped questioning. Yeah, really good. Really good, which ties in with that religious talk that we were talking about earlier on as well.
Sure, yeah.
You know, you just accept things for what they are, and therefore...
this is how it is.
Yeah.
It's just the way that it is. Anytime somebody says that to me, I'm like, you have a lot of healing work to do. It's who I am. No, it's who you choose to be. You just don't realize you're choosing it.
Well, so we're looking... If we just go in the middle of that, so we've got, you know, we've got this, okay... we'll stick with relationships. All right. So this, you know, she said this and I am an asshole and oh my gosh, like she said all these kinds of things. Maybe I am one. And then you don't give yourself the compassion or, you know, allow yourself to be human and you go, oh my gosh, you get OCD about it. Maybe that's one, the other side of the spectrum of that as well. But all of it is external validation that you're looking for. So you're saying in this specific scenario, guys, to be able to look within themselves and go, right, am I showing up in this way? How am I feeling right now in response to what she's saying? Is she having a moment? Is there some truth to what she's saying? Can we be reasonable about it? Let's think of it with curiosity. Fantastic. I'm so on board with what you're saying. But in the middle of that, there's this kind of feeling from men that I see as a pattern, you know, myself included, is that you want to be the hero. You want to be the superhero. You want to fix the problem. But the danger is when we want to fix the problem, we feel like we're going to fix the damsel in distress and help her out. And we completely abandon what's going on the inside here. So we pour into that. And then there's almost this feeling of, you know, once it's fixed, so to speak, there's this feeling of like, now I deserve a reward because I sacrificed my stuff in order to lift you up, right? And then there's further resentment to do with that as well.
Yeah. Well, and that's very much conditioned in our society of just even the phrase happy wife, happy life, that your worth and your value to a woman is how happy she is. I call bullshit. Because again, that is rooted in you being responsible for another human's emotions. And by the way, happiness is an emotion and all emotions are temporary. Right. So if we are aiming for something that's temporary, I often get the phrase of she keeps moving the goalpost. So I do what she says she would make her happy. I go do it. And then it's not enough because he already has the belief that he's not enough. So he's looking at that as evidence of I keep moving the goalpost. When men want to, quote unquote, fix the problem, I love that you used air quotes on that because I ask, well, what's the problem? Because most men aren't taking the time to actually understand the problem because it's emotional for a woman more so. right? Versus a logical problem to be solved. So when men say women are emotional, well, no shit. Of course we are. We were designed that way. You act as if that's a wrong or a bad thing. Just because you didn't learn emotions doesn't make us wrong or bad for our emotions. Now, that also doesn't mean that you become the emotional punching bag for a woman. That is an emotionally immature response. We need to have boundaries with that so that you don't enable your own mistreatment, right? But men have emotions too. You guys have nervous systems and bodies that communicate to you, but you were not as well equipped or educated on what those emotions are, what they mean. A lot of that was actually numb, distract, repress it because nobody wants to hear you cry, baby, or whatever language was spoken to you. Because from, if we want to look at like a historical context of why that is, back in the day, before we had modern day society, we like survival meant you had to go do work out in the fields or wherever, whether you felt like it or not. So back before we had modern day, because most of our problems now are mental and psychological than actual physical. But back in the day, if you physically did not go do work and you let your feelings guide your decisions, people died, people suffered, right? So there was a real cost to feeling things in a survival-based society, right? And so when we get started more, we had relationships that were transactional, meaning women couldn't even get a bank account without a man until the 1970s, at least here in the US. So a woman who emotionally felt abused or taken advantage of or disconnected from her partner didn't have a choice to do anything else. She had kids. She couldn't go financially afford to move out and get an apartment by herself. She was also like judged for that and outcast for that. So transactional ways was relationships up until we started getting more emotionally intelligent, having more connection outside of our own community by way of the internet. And so modern day world has shifted where women are like, we want to be empowered. We want a girl boss close to the sun and equal pay. And so what that's done is started to shift relational dynamics away from transaction where man works outside of the house, woman, you know, takes care of the children, to more, I don't even want to call it equality, but we'll just use that for a simple term, of women can financially contribute to the household and provide for themselves. But we have several generations of men who were told your value and your worth is protecting and providing. Women are not so much in physical risk of needing protection. We're more mental and emotional risk by way of the internet and Instagram posts and all that. And so our needs for protection and provision, and I'm using air quotes, are much different than they were in previous generations that taught us how to have relationships. And so that's where there's been a huge disconnect in marriages and relationships between men and women, is that women have rightfully or wrongfully evolved out of I need physical protection and physical provision to I need emotional connection and sharing of the mental load and bandwidth, because now I'm required to work outside of the house because inflation and society and expectations, and I'm girl boss and I want to have my own business and blah, 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 blah. And we're all still primarily responsible for children raising. We hormonally are still having hormones that go up and down. We go into phases where our hormones increase. We have postpartum depression. We have perimenopause, menopause, all of this stuff. So we're still having our woman experience, but we're trying to be a man in a world that was created for men. So there is a massive shift in women and what their needs are, but men who weren't equipped in that in childhood and are having to learn by way of probably divorce more often than not of what a woman needs for them and the lack of skills and tools that men have in order to be the partner that both partners thrive with. And for men to not have their feelings weaponized against them from a society of women who also were told men and their feelings are dangerous, which to some extent they can be, but also that doesn't mean that they're bad or broken. It just means that they also have a lack of skills and tools that they need to learn.
Yeah, for sure.
Total tangent, but you get
me
going.
No, you didn't. No, I love it. I love it. It's I think you're spot on, and I think I agree with what you're saying there. And it's so interesting as well, because like we can easily think within the time frame that we live in, and we could give or take 5 years, but actually it's taken a long time to get to where we are now. And the consequences of decisions or, you know, roads that we travel are real. They just are, you know, for whatever reason. You might not be the person who is there to start a movement or whatever, but we live in those consequences. One of those, if I pick up on one of your points, is it is being more emotionally intelligent, and that comes with consequence, right? I actually think it's a good thing to be emotionally intelligent. Fantastic. But it does come with consequence. And it does come with, okay, now that we are in this space and we have this wisdom or knowledge, I should say, how can we apply wisdom to it? How can we say, right, as a society, this is where we're at. How can we navigate and almost change or tweak whatever word is relevant to steer this in a way that makes sense, that would be for the betterment for the many. We can't cover everyone, right? I like that you made that little point with equality as well. I think it's a little bit of a dirty word myself, but like I hear what you're saying is how can we do this to the betterment of most people instead of like hyper focusing on a small minority, then that becomes the conversation for everyone. It just doesn't quite work like that, because when we do that, we actually damage the majority, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, I look at it as, so my tagline for almost all of my videos is, I'm on a mission to create a self-aware army because it's lonely in these self-aware streets. Because when you're self-aware, then you can make intentional choices. There's nothing wrong with a man being the main financial provider and protector and a woman staying home and whatever. It's being intentional about choosing a partner who aligns with that. And where most people, if they're getting, you know, dating and getting married in their early 20s and they're following the traditional model of having kids after that and all this, we're being reactive based on a record of the past that we were witness to, or what we were told is this is the definition of what you should do in life and what the purpose is in life. And then we kind of, again, we start to experience this disconnect between nervous systems, essentially what it is, when we start to get into long-term partnership. Then you throw in kids in the mix. So now we have more mouths to feed, more responsibility financially and protection-wise. And we have now a hormonally all over the place partner in the woman who has just gone through a major overhaul. And she is now, this is where like the dynamic shifts after kids. But most people are not stopping to, after they have kids and along the way, to go, does the vision we had for ourselves when we got married or when we started dating still apply now that things have changed? And that intentionality of creating, co-creating a relationship that serves both of you to live the life that you want to live, and being able to have conversations around it without it leading to disconnect and internalizing like, oh, we're like, he's just mean, he's an asshole, he works all the time, whatever. That's when you can start to have, where my mom always equated it to, she's like, your dad and I were all, you know, we'd always go into a rut and we had to work to bring our ruts back together. And then, you know, life would happen and we'd realize we were in our ruts again and we had to work to bring it back together. And that, without knowing that, was them being intentional about checking in. Are we okay with this? Is this set of factors? Because when we add stress to any situation, you're going to get out what's inside. So I love one of the quotes that I heard is, when you squeeze an orange, what comes out of it? What's inside. So when people are squeezed, whether financially, whether through stress, work, the economy, COVID, what's inside is going to come out. And that's there to heal. It's there to be addressed, not to be avoided, numbed, or distracted. But oftentimes, if we're not aware that it's our stuff coming out to heal, we make our partner responsible for the way we feel. And if I don't feel good, then I'm going to blame you. But you don't feel good, so you're blaming me. And now we're both drowning and holding the other person responsible for drowning, rather than we each need to learn to swim, and then we need to swim in the same direction. And then we throw kids into the mix, and then we throw aging parents, and then we throw loss of job and all these other things. And we forget that the whole goal was connection in the first place, and we've lost that.
Yeah, 100%. And those things come out of that connection, right? The kids come out of that connection. They're a blessing. They're a byproduct of that love, you know, if we take it back down to basics.
I mean, they don't have to be. There's plenty of ways that kids can happen without love being involved.
Sure,
in it, but, you know.
Sure. In the ideal scenario, let's say.
Right.
But yeah, you know, I agree with that. And I think it's really interesting to see the amount of marketing, advertising, narrative that's out there to steer us away from exactly that.
Yeah. Yeah. And the divorce rates. And I mean, it's fascinating to me because I am constantly exposed to the worst of the worst of men, of relationships, that's all I do is work with people who are struggling in relationships. And the fact that I can still hold a potential of possibility for me to have a type of partnership that I want, even though everything in my outside world mirrors and it gives me evidence that it's not possible. That's where it's, again, being intentional. What do I choose to believe? Not based on what the world is telling me, not based on my experiences, but what do I want to choose to believe? I like to live in a world where I know that the type of partner that I desire and that type of connection is out there, rather than living in a world where, oh, yep, there's no evidence of good men out there, or no evidence of men. Like, I get to choose what I want to believe. And kind of tying back to your point of the consequences, there's consequences for every choice. Every choice has a consequence. And when you recognize that and you accept it and you don't resist it, then make the choice that has the consequence you're okay with. And that's really where we get our power back, is like, okay, well, I accept that if I hold a boundary here, that may upset her, but I'd rather hold a boundary that has self-respect in it as opposed to just caving and losing myself because I'm trying to make her happy and I don't actually know how to solve it in any other way.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where I think the essence of self-love really comes from. Because, you know, when we think of self-love, we're thinking about, well, it can be often thought about as the spa day and I took some time out for myself. I had a beer with the boys, whatever. But actually, there's this level of, can I look in the mirror and say to myself, I showed up for you today. I showed up for you.
I'm proud of how I showed up.
Yeah.
And I think when we go back to, there's an identity piece that you were talking about, because men deal more so than women, I think, with shame. And I want, because you were talking about like an action, but what's the difference between guilt and shame? Guilt is, you were saying I'm the asshole or I am an asshole, right?
I mean, I wasn't declaring it over myself.
No, but the example that you were giving, not you specifically. See, there's the shame. Wait, no, I'm not. So, okay, your partner is giving you feedback and you go, God, I'm an asshole or I'm just the asshole or whatever. So that's rooted in shame because it's an identity that you are an asshole versus you did an asshole-like thing, right?
Yeah.
So it's almost taking it of guilt is having a feeling about an action, a negative feeling about an action versus an identity that something's wrong, bad, or broken. And so a lot of men default to shame and they, because it's been used in childhood as a motivator to control them versus, oopsies, I did something that was out of character or it wasn't my intention, but I understand it had an impact on you. I'm so sorry. I'm going to learn what was at play there so that doesn't keep repeating. Because when you look at yourself of a human who's growing, evolving, and learning, and you have that belief about yourself that you're never going to be perfect and get it right, but as long as you're learning and growing along the way, it's really hard to have shame as a part of that because you have acceptance for I did the best I could with the skills and tools I had. I now know based on that experience, because I wouldn't have learned it in any other way except the painful way, I needed new skills and tools because it's not going to get me where I want to go. So I'm going to go out and learn those so that I don't keep repeating these things. Because when you are in a repeated cycle, you create an identity or a belief about it and about yourself that then gets reinforced. You go out into the outside world, try and find evidence to match your internal beliefs, right? And so again, it's all rooted in that shame as opposed to, whoopsies, like I made a mistake and I can own that and I can be better for it. So it's like, now that I know better, I'm going to do better. And that really comes from a place of empowerment and self-respect, as opposed to never having made a mistake or been an asshole ever in your life.
And even just getting that distinction clear in your mind changes the way that you ask for forgiveness or you say sorry to someone, right?
Yeah.
Am I saying sorry, asking for forgiveness because I'm doing it out of guilt, or am I doing it out of shame? Have I got enough empathy for myself to say, right, I'm going to own this and I'm actually going to show this person some respect and say, listen, I really messed up. I done wrong by you. And I'm here to, you know, take my punishment or take, you know,
accept
whatever
the consequences
it is.
That
accept
come with
the consequences,
that.
Exactly, yeah. That, whatever that might look like. And that's a willingness that comes from within because you're wanting to move forward.
Yeah.
I think if we go back to the distraction piece again, you know, oh, you know what, that's in the past now. Nothing can be done about it. It is what it is. And you move forward. When you're going, actually, you're robbing yourself from a learning opportunity. Like, what could I have
done? And you're likely to repeat the cycle if you don't actually go and heal why it happened in the first place. And that to me is, you know, I've kind of gotten into some arguments with some commenters on what accountability is, because they're all like, women versus accountability. I'm like, it's not a gender issue. To me, accountability, a lot of people think that apologizing is an accountability. To me, that is one part, because change behavior to me is more important than actually owning it with the words. And that's coming from somebody with words of affirmation, love language. Because for me, my ex used to always say, you know, like, he would change or he'll do things differently, but the behavior kept going. So that broke trust, because now you're saying one thing, but you're doing another, and I keep getting hurt in the process. So I don't trust you not to hurt me, no matter how much you say, whatever you say. Your behavior is a language. So to me, accountability is changed behavior, but it's hard to change behavior. Most people, and again, I'm going to stick with men, think that if they can white knuckle their way through life and try to force themselves to be whoever they want to be, that then that's sustainable. But usually that is ineffective, because if you look at a man who's going to, let's say, go on a healing journey, right? His wife says, you need to do the work, or she's got one foot out the door, she's filed divorce, and he goes, oh, I need to go fix this. Finally, like I see it now. I couldn't see it before. Oh my God, I don't want to lose her. So he goes into this performative actions of healing. I'm going to go to therapy. I'm going to read the books. I'm going to implement all these tools. And maybe he does enough to get her to give him another chance. And he does good for like a couple of months, but he did not actually heal the root of what the issue was and the belief systems he had about himself. And he slides back to old patterns, which then now really breaks her trust because she saw changed behavior, but it wasn't sustainable because it was still rooted in performance, not actually an identity shift of where he shows up as a way he wants to. And if she chooses him back, great. If she doesn't, it doesn't change the fact that this is who he wants to be, because that's what's sustainable and changed behavior. When you recognize the value in it for yourself to not self-abandon, to not people please at the cost of yourself, to not do all this performance stuff that you inherently think you're worthy and deserving of love, that's when you can have changed behavior forever, right? Without it being performance-based or I have to white knuckle my way to change.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And it becomes part of your identity then.
Yep.
And not like a performative pattern that you keep trying to, you know. It's a bit like I was doing some coaching today, actually, and we were looking at exercise and nutrition. Mm-hmm. Okay, if you see it as a project, you see it as a tick box, you're going to see it as something that goes on the priority somewhere. And if something else comes up, then okay, I won't do the exercise. Yeah. I won't do the nutritional bit. But if you see it as something that is a part of your lifestyle and your habit and it's a part of your identity, then you look at it, you treat it completely different. No, yeah. I exercise because it's part of who I am.
Yeah.
And I do 10 minutes a day or 3 hours a day. It, you know, that's not what I'm measuring. I'm measuring that I'm actually doing it. And that's important.
Well, you know, how it feels, right? Rather than an external outcome. Because again, especially with something like exercise, even 1 week off changes how you physically appear or physically feel. But if you do it, like you said, as part of a routine because it's your identity, that's what's sustainable over time. Anybody who's doing it, let's just say for bodybuilding, because I've worked with bodybuilders before, they go hardcore during a season, but that's not sustainable, even healthy for their body to be in that kind of shape or that kind of nutrition level for sustained periods of time. And so it's looking at what's sustainable and what's doable given who you desire to be. Now, if you want to be a bodybuilder, great, but you're not going to be a bodybuilder when you're every single day for the rest of your life. So if health is important to you, I know for me, a big shift for me exercising was how I felt at the gym. Like if I felt comfortable and safe at the gym, or it became part of, like you said, part of my routine, and now I identify as a CrossFitter, right? It took time to get there. That then becomes just a natural part of my week. I don't have to fight myself to go to the gym, and you know, I don't have to fight myself to lift a barbell. It's something that is, like you said, just an identity or something that I just do. I don't fight it and I don't resist it most days.
Yeah. No, and even if we touch on parenting, you know, we're both parents here. I am a father. I just am one, you know? And so when you look at it from that lens, as opposed to, oh, I'm a dad now, I must do these things because that's what dads do. Then again, you're in that performative state, even if you're performing for yourself, but you're in that state of like, oh, I ought to be doing this, I ought to be doing that. When you're like, no, I am a dad. Okay, what comes with that? Well, this is what comes with that. Why does that come with that? Because that's my understanding of being a dad, and I can be more curious and learn more skills around that. Great.
Yeah.
But it's not, you know, touching on something you said earlier on, it's not like, because that's the way it is. No, that's not the way it is. I can have a look at what that looks like for me as a dad, you know.
But it's again, like putting on identity. Colored glasses and how you look through the world, your identity, whether you're aware you have an identity or not. But when you look at the world through being a dad, you see things differently, right? You think about your time and your energy throughout the day. Like I had to pull back on CrossFit on certain days because I was too tired at night when my kids came home. Mm-hmm. Right. I love the gym. I love going to the gym, but also it exhausted me so much that I wasn't the mom that I wanted to be. So I had to look at the world and my workouts through the lens of I'm a mom and I choose to be a mom who's present with their kids. Right. And so all of that, when again, you take kind of the mask or the fog off of the world just is what it is, and you start to get self-aware, then you can choose how you want to show up, how you want to feel, how you want to be as an identity, what identity you choose rather than one that was just handed to you by your parents and your upbringing.
Now, very good. I had a couple of other things I was going to ask you, but I think we've kind of covered the damsel in distress, the superhero. Mansplaining is a term that, you know, has come
love
up
it.
In recent years.
I love a good mansplaining. I will poke holes in it all day long.
But again, like, and you know, I'm not a woman. I haven't been a woman, but I don't know if it's gender, it's specifically gender, but like if you are listening to a man who's doing his best to mansplain something, what would you say to that? Would you say, sorry, I don't want to overload the question, but what would you say to women now? We're speaking to women when someone feels like they need to explain something and try to be the hero in the situation.
It depends on what's being mansplained. So if he's trying to, well, I think mansplaining is always rooted in somebody trying to help. Where I find, and again, mansplaining to me is just a man sharing his interpretation of something. Now, what I'm going to say to that was that interpretation invited? Right? Because a lot of men will default to jumping in to fix when they have not been asked to fix. So what I usually recommend, especially if you're in a relationship or in a marriage, is especially a man asking, do you want me to fix this? Do you need advice? Or do you just need me to listen? Because then she can tell you exactly what she needs from you so that you don't go off on some tangent trying to mansplain something that has nothing, no relevance to what she's talking about. Right. So if you get clarity on fix, advice, listen, and I do recommend like having this conversation with your partner that this is something that you're going to now try. If she says, I don't know, it's listen. 99% of the time, default to listening, you should be good. You don't actually have to fix anything. Women are pretty smart, right? We can figure things out, but we have to verbally process a lot of times. And by way of this episode, and anytime you have a conversation with women use a lot more words than men. Men try to, what I interpret mansplaining to be, is a very dumbed down version of what the explanation is. But you have to see if she actually wants something explained or fixed. Otherwise, you are missing the point completely. So I'll give you an example, just kind of a different example. I had a friend who's also another content creator who, bless his heart, is trying to give me so much advice unsolicited about how I post. Now, to be fair and honest, he does not monetize anything with his posting. He just looks at it as a consumer. I've been doing this for 8 years. I know what I'm doing. So he messages me out of the blue, and I do have a team that helps schedule posts. So they scheduled post in the US like in the middle of the night, and he saw that. I didn't know that was happening, nor do I care because for other reasons. But he texts me and he goes, hey, tell your team to stop posting in the middle of the night. These are great videos. They're not getting the views they could. You know, she needs to post in American time. And I responded back, I don't remember asking for your opinion on this. Now, we have a fun relationship where I can be direct and joking like that because I am. I would have rephrased it if we didn't have that. But I literally did not ask for his opinion or help. He didn't ask if this was a problem that I needed help with. He just came in with his opinion trying to be valuable. Now, with where I'm at this week, I have done a lot of coaching, so I'm just kind of tired, and we have a personal relationship. And I said, with all due respect, if I need social media marketing advice, I'm not going to come to you. And that is not a bash on you, but you keep trying to find value in my life, and you have value in my life. It is just not in the means of social media. And when he got that and he responded back, he said, this is a pattern I have experienced in so many relationships where I'm trying to be valuable, but it's not received. And you just highlighted something that I know I need to work on. Because I was afraid I was going to be too harsh and too rough, but I really did not want to hear, like, he constantly does this. And I've set boundaries before of, you can ask why we may be doing something, but you don't understand all the 15 pieces that are going on the back. And the fact that in this current season, we had 947 DM responses last month. My team is maxed out on how much we can handle in DMs. So I'm kind of okay if a video doesn't perform and that it's posted in the middle of the night. Right? Like in the season that we're in, that's okay. But he thought, I've got to save her. She's a damsel in distress and she doesn't know her team's posting in the middle of the night. And I had to very clearly say, no, I know exactly what I'm fucking doing. And so that to me is kind of just what happens in relationships of like, I've got to be the hero rather than actually being her hero and understanding what she needs and wants. Because what I look to him for is understanding how tough being an online platform creator can be and the emotional connection of somebody else who can experience that. I don't need him for strategy. I go elsewhere for that because he doesn't have evidence and proof to speak into my life. And for him trying to feel valued and like for something that he's not an expert in or that I would go to him for seems a little bit like now I have to like cater to his ego and be walk around on eggshells to not offend him when he did something that I didn't ask for his input in. So that's kind of giving like a different perspective of what often happens in relationships is like, now you've introduced that you're trying to be the hero and all this. I cut straight to it and said, we can have connection without you having to give me that advice. This is a bid for connection. I am happy to connect with you. I don't want to connect with you about this, right? Let's connect on something. So, but it does take emotional intelligence on both parties and that level of trust for us to have that direct of a conversation where it's not attacking him. It's not insulting him, but it is saying, I don't need help with this.
Yeah. And I think going back to what we were saying earlier on in terms of, you know, not looking for that external validation and being secure in who you are. And yeah. you showed up in that way, in the way that you communicated to him, because you did say to him, you're still up for that connection. You know, you value the relationship, but you don't need this from it.
Yeah.
And that's powerful, because without that line, you know, what the other person could feel, especially if they're dysregulated, is I am useless, or I wasn't the hero, or actually she rejected something that's very good. Like, what's wrong with this woman? You know, whereas you're like, no, I'm with you.
I got defensive too. I noticed within myself when he said that, I got like, like, I don't want to talk to you about this. It made me want to push him away. And I had to fight myself in that, of just my own exhaustion of going, no, he's very passionate. Like, this is coming from a loving place. Like, he loves my content. The root of it is he wanted it to get more attention because he values it. So I saw that intention. I looked at my own internal response of, I just wanted to shut him down, like push away from him. No, let's lean into connection. Now, this is, I think, where the healing work begins with both parties, is being able to go through that process in yourself so that you don't interpret things with the wrong story that then create different emotions and create different behavior. Because I could have very easily destroyed the relationship by just shutting him down without giving context or without acknowledging that it really was rooted in a wonderful, like, encouraging, supportive friend. So yeah, I think when two people can get to that point and learn those skills and tools and be able to communicate those ways, that's where we can deepen intimacy and connection.
Yeah. And not be afraid to interrupt each other as well when that's happening. Because I'm thinking about some of my experiences where maybe a colleague has asked, she's a female, and she's asked for something, and I'm like, oh, well, actually, this is how it works. And you start going into this story, and her to go, no, I know how it works. I was just wondering, do you know the formula for this Excel spreadsheet? I'm using that as a silly example. I don't know anything about Excel, but like, and then you go, oh, okay, you want to be, that was a specific thing you needed help with. All right, brilliant, bam. And and you can have that too in, you know, that too in, what do you call it? Like that dance, let's say, and step on each other's toes a little bit. And if the relationship is, you know, on a decent level, you can walk away from that both, you know, with an outcome, which is,
and
which
he
is
was
pleasant.
Willing to self-reflect, and so was I, on like how we can be better. He said, you know, like, I recognize that I need to be more curious, because he has a lot to learn from me. If he wanted to, if he asked questions, he'd learn a whole lot about what we have going on, so that he understands why it's happening the way that it's happening. Whereas I think that's where men miss the connection piece, is they go straight to fixing to try and feel, like you said, the hero, but they've completely missed the part of the experience that she's having that you can be a part of, or at least hold space for, that will then lead to her feeling connected and safe with you. Because if you go straight to fixing, you're probably fixing the wrong problem 99% of the time.
And it's within us, right? I'm being very general with that. But we, for those of us who are dads with daughters, we do that for our daughters. Instinctively, we do that. And it's funny that we don't translate that into our partners sometimes, which is really interesting. And the other thing I would say, like, you know, I was in a relationship for a long, long time where I was exactly that performance based. If I could play the song on the piano and make it feel, if I could do, hey, look at me, I'm the monkey, like, you know, come and pat me on the back, give me the gold star. I can do that. And in the dating world, I'm like, I could throw all of these amazing things about me on the first date, which I'm not saying happened, right? But like, and then
never, not once. No, I stopped myself.
That first time afterwards, and then you go, actually, it's all right. I don't need to impress anyone here. I'm seeking an authentic connection. And I'm seeing this a lot when I'm talking to other singles, men and women, seeking an authentic connection. And what that connection brings out is, it will happen naturally. You know, you'll get the opportunity to play the song, or to, you know, show how good you are at bowling or pool or whatever it is. But if you're trying to throw that from and to impress for a badge, then actually you're already starting off on a dynamic where there's a I'm not saying it in all cases, but there's a dynamic that you're going to create.
No, for the most part, if it's performative in nature to begin with, then that's something that you are now introducing to the connection right off the bat that becomes harder to sustain. And it's not sustainable, because we talked about the performative being a temporary thing. So that's where people get into problems when they've been in a relationship for several years of like, you're not the man I fell in love with, or you've changed. No, you are now yourself. And so when you're talking about that authentic connection, that's how you start to look at dating and relationships, of how authentic am I being? Now, a lot of people will take that to the extreme of like, I need a trauma dump and just lay it all out there right off the bat. No, there's, like you said, there's a dance to it, of like a natural progression of allowing people access to your vulnerability, right? But you're being intentional about how you're showing up. Yes, it's wonderful to like bring flowers or open the door or whatever, right? As long as you're doing it as like, this is who I am and how I want to show up in relationships. And I can sustain this for as long and forever as I need to. I'm not doing it just to earn the date or get her into bed or those kinds of things. And so it's, again, creating that self-awareness of how do I want to show up in a way that is consistent and sustainable? And that's, to me, is like the beauty of going through divorce and failed long-term relationships is you weren't intentional, because I don't know about you, I never knew any of this stuff. Like when I was dating in my 20s, just thought, oh, first guy who wants to marry me, cool, let's go do it. We'll figure it out as we go.
In and between now basketball games, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. But I learned, the cost of settling and self-abandonment, and I'm not willing to pay it again. And so there is much different intentionality about going out and dating and not just tolerating boring ass conversations, because I don't want to sit there and talk about boring conversations for the rest of my life. I want to have deep, meaningful conversations, and not everybody's up for that. Cool. I'm not looking for everybody.
And the consequence of that decision may mean that you are single for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Right? May mean, right?
What are you trying to say, Ricks?
No, I'm not projecting.
Yeah, get rid of the deep conversations, Sarah. You'll be lonely.
No, where I was going with that is, and I'm saying this for myself as well. If I'm not someone who's willing to settle, and I don't mean that in a high maintenance kind of way, if I want an authentic connection and I don't want to settle for one that's not authentic just because I don't want to be lonely, then already I'm shortchanging myself. I'm shortchanging the person that I've committed to and they've committed to me. Yeah. So one of the consequences may mean that I stay single for the rest of my life. And if I really am willing to die on that sword, it means that the authenticity that I'm seeking is of high value.
Yeah.
And I can look in the mirror and say, okay, man, like this is what you wanted. And if it comes, and that's, that's the hope, right?
Yeah.
Then great, you're going to value that a lot more. And then we're not playing performance games. We're not playing these silly things that society teaches about what the man, what the woman should be. You said your brother was a stay-at-home, looking after the kids and stuff. I have a couple of male friends, only two out of the whole bunch, who have also taken that decision because it was right for their family.
Yeah.
And one of them, I did ask him actually, a little sidestep here, but I was like, how do you feel about doing that, in your manhood? Like, I'm not saying that you shouldn't, but I'm just kind of like seeing what that feels like for you. And he was like, yeah, if people give me slack, I'll knock them out. I was like, okay, that's one way.
Here's my manhood.
Fair play. And whereas the other guy, a little bit more, be careful because he watches this, gentle in spirit, let's say.
Yeah.
And very in touch with more feminine traits by his own admission. He says it works really well for him because he gets all that connection with the kids and the his wife just isn't maternal in that way. And it works for them. I think again is we were slightly touched on polarity earlier on, but it's like taking the lead in what's right for your family is important. It doesn't have to be a 2.4 children, cookie cutter framework.
The model that was force fed to us growing up. Yeah.
Absolutely. Whilst also recognizing that the general majority would probably still stay in that older model, traditional model. And that can be beautiful too, right? We don't want to abandon that either.
Again, it's that intentionality of like working that out with your partner and co-creating that along the way, because it may shift and change. You may lose a job and she may have to go back to work for a while, or we need to move out of this city and go move across the country because we can't afford to live here. Or we thought we wanted this lifestyle that, you being an attorney was going to provide for us. But now we realize, hey, you're never home and the kids miss you. So you need to give up that career so that we can have this family life. Like it's again, having those conversations of what are we co-creating.
Absolutely. And it's the value piece again that you were talking about earlier on. Do our values align?
Yeah.
And where they might have gone off an alignment, how can we get them to align again, even if we have different goals? That's okay, but how can I lift you in yours, and how can you lift you in me in mine, and we create this beautiful service for each other to be able to move forward. And I think that's where the winning is,
because when you sacrifice yourself or your wants or your dreams, that's where the resentment builds, because you're not actually working together. You're like doing it thinking that is you loving them by sacrificing what you want. It's co-creating together, that nobody's wants or needs are more important than the other. We've got to find what that creative solution is, where we're both working together towards the shared vision.
Absolutely. And let's say, look, Tara and Rix are together. I've got this amazing opportunity. Babe, I'm going to go out and do it. It's going to mean a lot more money for our family. It's a 5-year kind of commitment. It means that a lot of the weight is going to be on you. I know you have this dream of becoming a XYZ. Can you hold that for me for 5 years? you know what, Rix, I could do that. I could do that for 5 years, because I know that when we've made this much, then that will unlock the training that I need to do what I want to do. So you're kind of going, okay, there are some compromises, some sacrifices to make, but how can we do it so that we're both winning and maybe one has
and
to
then
step
I
back
say
a
it's
bit.
Checking in every 3 to 6 months to going, is that still true? Because you can have all these fantasies on like what it's going to look like and, you know, at the end of 5 years, but oftentimes things happen, right? Maybe you have another kid in those 5 years and we need to reevaluate. And so it's yes, we agree to these amazing, wonderful dreams and visions and sacrifices or commitments, but are we checking in along the way? And I find that that's where a lot of people miss that, is that they have these, what we call covert contracts, where you agree to something, but then you don't really hash it out with your partner, or you have an expectation that you've never communicated that, oh, well, I didn't know it was going to involve this thing, or I didn't realize how hard it would be once we got into it, but I felt like I already committed to it. And so I'll just take on more, but then I get resentful and bitter because I'm taking on too much and I can't sustain it.
I mean, you're being very generous with 3 months. I'd be like on a weekly basis.
Yeah, I mean, but your emotions are going to fluctuate that much. But yeah. Again, like maybe it's, yeah, you're checking in with each other regularly, but having that bigger conversation of like, hey, how's this going? Yeah. That way you can be proactive in the life that you're creating.
How's this for a thought? How's this for a thought, right? How this thought, you know, marriages, right? Instead of going, right, we're married and we're going to be married for life, right? So everyone goes, oh, I'm married for life now. First year goes well, you take the foot off the accelerator, now you're complacent, things aren't going so well. How about a performance review?
Yeah, right? You do it in jobs.
You do it in jobs, exactly.
Why not life
right?
partner?
Why not life partner? Once a year, you check in. Are we good? Are we moving towards what we said we were going to do? Do we need to change our values, our goals, whatever? Let's have a conversation around that. And actually, do we still want to be together? Now, I think that kind of creates a level of action in your relationship as well. Like, okay, this is coming up. I want to be a good husband. How can I listen to, with curiosity to learn more, and vice versa, etc. And you can kind of have that. It's just a thought, right? I know it sounds like anti-marriage, but I think it actually would strengthen marriage because now you've got these kind of accountability, you know, things that could result in you guys going your separate ways, and you don't want to do that. So you're like, okay, let's kind of make things happen. There is a danger about, you know, the performative stuff that we were talking about, but on the whole, you know, it's a better way of looking at it. Like, oh, I'm stuck with you for 20 years. Oh man.
Like, you know. Right. And I run into people like that all the time, and people who just will not get divorced for whatever reason, either financially or religious wise, they refuse to get divorced. I'm like, okay, cool. So you can either work on your side of the street and invite your partner to work on theirs. You don't get a say in that. Or you can live in acceptance that you choose to stay married because of whatever reason, and accept that your marriage is just not going to be a pleasant part of your life, but stop being in resistance to that, right? And stop the suffering associated with that. Just know you're going to sleep in separate bedrooms. This is somebody that you share kids with and a home with, but that's it. So go live your best life and just know that there's just one part of it that's going to be a little bit of a dark cloud. There's no right or wrong in that. Right. If you don't want to get divorced and that's not right for everybody, great. But if you want a healthy relationship, then yeah, both of you have to choose that. And so, again, we have the experience of having gone through marriages blind to all of this stuff and now have a lot more context of how to create more connection by way of doing it not so great. And that's where it's like the intentionality, the co-creating, that's all I'm here for. Like, I can co-create a life with someone. And, you know, if that doesn't end up in marriage or that we choose to go differently, great, fine. We're learning along the way.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. We talked a little bit about God earlier on, and my belief, and I'm not saying that you need to believe this or anyone listening needs to believe this, but my belief is that we are co-authors with this divine being, right? It's not prescriptive. It's not, well, prescriptive is not the right word, but it's not destiny. Nothing set in stone. So we have an element of freedom. We have an element of authoring our life. And I think if we can do that with this divine being who we can't quite understand, let's be honest, then we should be able to do that with our partner as well. We're co-authors. It's not like, okay, this is locked in and we've got to do something and one person has to suffer all the way through. It's not like that. We're serving each other. We're working towards a common goal. So yeah, throwing that in. I want to ask you, you are branded as Unblock Your BS. Can you speak into that a little bit?
Yeah. So the BS is kind of up for interpretation, either belief systems, which is kind of my fun way of saying it, or bullshit. It's really the same. There's no difference. But that's really it. When we look at these belief systems, these identities, these thoughts that we think, a lot of what my skill set is shifting perspectives. So I'll use a visual example, but I'll describe it for those that are listening. What is it that you see, Rix, that I'm holding up here?
I see a beach umbrella, a place I can lie down, put some glasses on by the sandy beach.
Yeah. So it's actually a coaster. And on the back, I see cork, right? So we are looking at the same thing, but we're seeing it differently. And that is 99% of the work that I do with people, is that I can get you to look at a situation in any different way to make you feel how you want to feel, because we can look at the same thing and see it very differently. And so especially in relationships, that's what's happening, is that we're looking at the same event, but we're seeing it differently. So how can we shift perspectives, whether it's about ourselves, about our childhood, about our relationship, about our work, about our children, whatever, and see it in a way that serves us? Because if we just default to whatever belief system we already have, we get blocked from the things that we want. So tying back to unblock your BS is unblocking the belief systems that are creating the negative experience or undesired experience that you want in life, so that you can actually create what you want to experience.
Love that.
Yeah.
So someone listening to this podcast, watching on YouTube, they want to reach out to you, they want to work with you. What kind of services do you offer?
Yeah. So primarily I love working with men inside my program, Healthy Mentality. It is a 12-week program where we deep dive a lot of this stuff. 12 weeks is a lot of life to be living. So generally the men that are appropriate for that program are those that are trying to save a marriage or in the verge of divorce, going through divorce or on the other side of divorce and not wanting to repeat those cycles and patterns. Doesn't mean that this work doesn't apply to women and those in dating. However, that seems to be like the men that benefit the most, because you're so ready to change and like start to face your shit in those situations. I do work one-on-one with clients. And then we also have a breathwork membership called Self-Aware Army. You can find all of that at unblockyourbs.com. We also have a weekly podcast that we release that I got to get Rix on too. Yeah.
Amazing. I'd love that. I'd love to come on. Yeah. That'd be so good. All right. Well, if you're watching on
YouTube, guys, he's coming.
I'm saying yes. So yes. There you go. Maybe I need to read the terms and conditions and see what I'm signing up for, right?
Right. You're going to give me your firstborn.
Never. So if you're watching on YouTube, you would have seen some of that stuff come up on the screen. The link's in the description as well. And I'll put up your Instagram as well, so people can send you a DM and connect with you directly as well. I would say... Oh, there was one other thing I wanted to ask you before you went. So you've branded yourself in that way, and it makes so much sense. And I love what you're building. I'm going courage, right? And I have my reasonings for that. But I wanted to ask you, from your perspective, what do the words go in courage mean to you?
Interesting. Go in courage. Yeah, all that's coming up for me is like taking that first step. Right? Action creates clarity is a phrase I often use. We want to control everything. We want to have like the outcomes predicted. We want to understand every different outcome, but oftentimes we won't know what the next right thing to do is until we take that first step. So go in courage. It takes courage to take that first step, not confidence, not a plan, not the next 20 steps thereafter. Take the first step.
Love that. Yeah.
You can take it.
You're bang on. You're exactly where you know what it was designed to do. And I think the first episode, by chance, it wasn't designed like this, but the first episode had the term courage takes action, and it became the name of the episode as well. And so even in my day to day, you know, I'm building this thing, but even in my day to day, when I you know, I'm faced with something and I notice the fear within me, I have to remind myself that courage takes action, and so you have to go or go in courage. So yeah.
Full circle moment. Love it.
Full circle moment. Thank you so much, Tara, for jumping on today. Absolutely. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
I'll have you on again in the future. And in that in between, I'll jump on yours and we'll have a nice chat then as well.
That sounds good. Be looking out for that link.
All right. So if you're listening, if you're watching, our message to you today is unblock your BS and to keep moving forward and to go in courage. I'll see you guys on the next episode. Hey, really hope you enjoyed that episode, and I hope there was something there that you can take away and reflect on. If you'd like to continue the conversation, you can do so publicly on YouTube via the comments, or if you prefer to be more private, you can DM me on Instagram, and the handle is @goencourage. You can also find links to everything at the website, which is www.goencourage.com. You can find a copy of the Courage Journal, links to TikTok, Instagram, and all the places that you can find Go Encourage online. You can also have a look at the upcoming Go Encourage blog, which is coming soon. So yeah, definitely do check that out.
But my encouragement to you is whatever you're doing, whatever you're going through, keep moving forward and to go encourage. I'll see you on the next episode.